This is WNYC, and you've been listening to the first official Campaign Finance Board debate for the Democratic nomination for New York City Comptroller. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer. And to further help you make up your minds about who to vote for in this race, we'll get some analysis of the debate now and open the phones for your comments or questions. So you can call in right now. Did anyone win that debate in your view, listeners? 646-435-7280. Did anyone make a specific point in that debate that you want to comment on or ask about? 646-435-7280. And do you have any questions about what you just heard, since we realize many of you probably feel you don't know all that much about the job of comptroller or what makes a good comptroller in the first place, so maybe you just want to ask a clarifying question. Our phones are open for any of that at 646-435-7280, or you can tweet your comment or question at me, at Brian Lehrer. WNYC's Bridget Bergen, who was asking questions in the debate, will join us in a few minutes after she catches her breath and changes Zoom screens. With us for the full half hour is WNYC and Gothamist Gwen Hogan, who is covering this race. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, thanks for having me, Brian.
So have you written your headline or your lead in your head yet for the story on this debate?
No, it just ended, Brian. That's not quite fair. But, you know, there was a debate last night, too, and we sort of saw similar dynamics play out. Everybody's going after Cory Johnson, who is, you know, according to very limited polling, two polls that we've seen of this race, continues to be the front runner. Though, like you said, many people are still undecided.
Let me play an example of that from early in the debate. And I think for a listener who is tuning into the race for the first time, the thing they probably couldn't help but notice was that Michelle Caruso Cabrera came to attack Cory Johnson particularly hard as failing to manage money well as city council speaker, and he came prepared to point out that she was a Republican until 2015 and she is funded by Wall Street. So here's an example of the two of them going at each other from very early in the debate. First, a few seconds of Caruso Cabrera.
The budget under Bill de Blasio and my opponent, Cory Johnson, has gone up by $20 billion per year from $72 billion to $92 billion. Next year's going to be even bigger. And everyone listening here tonight, does this city feel $20 billion a year better to you? Do you feel safer?
Okay.
Is it more affordable? Is your health care better? We need to do better. We are a rich city, but we spend our money very badly.
And here is Cory Johnson.
To answer Ms. Caruso Cabrera's point, Errol, we have invested in some great things. Universal pre-K, 3K for all, expanding our social safety net, doing these things. Ms. Caruso Cabrera was a lifelong Republican until 2015 who supported abolishing Social Security and Medicare.
So, Gwen, people will judge Cory Johnson's record however they will, good or bad or mixed. I wonder if you could fact check what he said about her, which is that she was a Republican until 2015 who supported privatization of Social Security and Medicare and is funded by pro-Trump Wall Streeters. True?
Yeah. Well, she ran against, let's not forget, she ran for Congress against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just last year, and she did not succeed in ousting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
In the Democratic primary, right?
Correct. And in that race, she was, you know, there's reporting at the time, I didn't cover that race closely, but several reports about her funding in the New York Post and Business Insider that was largely backed by Wall Street funders. She previously, you know, was a CNBC financial analyst for many years, and she wrote a book called You Know I'm Right, More Prosperity, Less Government, where she advocated for, you know, very limited government, reducing government services. And today you heard her say, I've evolved, I've evolved, I've evolved, and talk about things like free broadband and, broadband access for everyone and free CUNY. But I think it's sort of up to the voters to decide, you know, whether or not they believe that she has evolved or if, you know, if maybe she has different motives for running.
They had several exchanges like the one we just played, and they were attention grabbers. But as such, I think a listener could have overlooked that other candidates were very substantive. A few examples, Reshma Patel said she would audit the education department. Kevin Parker and Brian Benjamin mentioned that they would audit the NYPD. David Weprin separated himself from most of the others by saying we need more police. Brad Lander talked about auditing the corrections department following tragic deaths related to incarceration. In a way, though, it seemed like a lot of them were talking about policy that isn't necessarily the financial management of the city that's the controller's job. Did you get that impression?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to hear them, as many candidates have mentioned, a need to do kind of more sweeping audits, and they point to, you know, the example of Stringer, who's the current controller, who audited the NYPD twice and sort of very limited section, like specific audits that looked at specific practices within the department, and sort of a need for more, you know, the NYPD is the third largest city agency. And meanwhile, the Parks Department, which has like a fraction of the size of the budget, had more than two dozen audits. So I think, you know, it is interesting to hear, not necessarily politically, but many of the candidates talking about a need to kind of reimagine the role of the audit as something that has more to do with, you know, where the money is going overall, not so much in a political way. You know, when people say the Department of Education, that is by far the largest city agency. So it would make sense that you would want to audit that money and make sure that it's, you know, as Zach Iskel mentioned, which I think is interesting, is sort of auditing for outcomes rather than particular agencies. Like, can we, you know, work backwards and say, okay, are there less homeless people? And what are all the things that go into that and auditing that way? I don't know exactly how you do that, but it's an interesting idea.
And also joining us now is WNYC's Bridget Bergen, who was a questioner in the comptroller's debate. Out of the debate frying pan and into the post-debate show fire. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Sometimes it's harder to have a big picture view of a debate when you're in it than when you're watching it. I've been in that position. Mm-hmm. But was there a moment that you came out of those 90 minutes especially thinking about?
You know, I think it was the first time that I have heard all of these candidates together. I know they've done other debates and we've listened to them, but where I have the opportunity to pose questions to them, you know, you're struck by the sort of degree that some of these candidates are bringing to bear, the experience that they've already had in city government, working on city budgets, state budgets, versus those who are coming from outside of city government. Zach Iskel in particular, you know, when asked about what agency he would audit, you know, instead of talking about a city agency, talked about how he would be essentially looking at city problems and framing his approach to, you know, transparency in the work that the city comptroller's office does through a multi-agency lens, as opposed to just focusing on specific agencies one at a time, which I thought was interesting. Obviously, I think there's an effort on the part of some of these candidates, Michelle Caruso Cabrera and Corey Johnson in particular, to kind of take this very crowded field and make it into a two-person race. We saw a lot of back and forth throughout the debate between those two candidates, Caruso Cabrera, you know, using every opportunity and all of her media training coming from her time working for CNBC to interject whenever possible. And, you know, that certainly gave her more time to speak. Whether that time scored points for voters, I think we'll find out at the ballot box. But I thought that one of the final remarks coming from Councilmember Brad Lander was rather stinging, when he kind of took all of his critique of Speaker Johnson in terms of, you know, this report on sexual misconduct or harassment within the city council, the so-called Redwood report that has not yet been released, some of the issues related to bills that have been, you know, essentially on hold within the council, and kind of lumped it all together in a final shot at him. I thought that was pretty damning. So you know, it's a lot to juggle with all eight candidates, but those were my immediate reactions coming out of the studio.
You did a better job than I ever did paying attention to the whole debate, I'll tell you that. listeners, we've been having some problems with our phones, but I think we've got them resolved now, so I'll invite you once again to call in. Did anybody win that debate in your view, listeners? 646-435-7280. Did anyone make a specific point in that debate that you want to comment on, even an individual point? 646-435-7280. Or do you just have any questions about what you just heard, since, as I said at the top, we realize many of you probably feel you don't know all that much about the job of controller or what makes a good controller in the first place. So maybe you want to ask a clarifying question of Bridget Bergen, who was just in the debate, and Gwynne Hogan, who's been following the debate closely all along. 646-435-7280. The other thing you could do, just in case we have continuing problems on the phone, is tweet your comment or question. I've got our Twitter feed for my show right in front of me, so tweet at Brian Lehrer. If you want to comment or ask a question about the controllers debate, tweet at Brian Lehrer. Gwynne, since you have been covering the debate, I mean the race, what would you like to ask Bridget about the debate? Maybe you guys want to talk to each other.
Oh, Bridget, I thought you did a great job. I think one of the interesting things here is like what the controller can and can't do. And I'm curious, you know, how you sussed out like what people were saying that they were going to do versus like what they can actually do in that office, what their actual powers are.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we heard a lot of the candidates suggest were things that you would tend to expect a mayoral candidate to be talking about.
Yep.
And that was part of the reason why when I asked the candidates my question about public safety, and, you know, knowing that is, you know, looking at the NYPD is really one of the things that both Benjamin and Parker have made central to their campaigns. You know, I wanted to force them to try and talk about it in the context of what they could do as controller. So, you know, in addition to audits, one of the questions that I wanted to ask, unfortunately, that we had to skip for time was related to the settlement of claims, which is another function of the office. You know, the NYPD settlements cost taxpayers more than $200 million a year. And one of the things that has been recommended, you know, since back when Liz Holtzman was controller is that potentially those settlements should be used as a tool to help the city identify both bad actors, bad officers, but also bad policies. And, you know, I wanted to know to what extent these candidates thought that that would be, you know, a useful tool, and to what extent they think that the agencies themselves should be shouldering some of the financial burden that they cause that the city is then, you know, paying out as a result of. So we had to skip that question. But, you know, it was hard, Gwynne, to like get these candidates to come back to what are the functions of this office. You know, it is an oversight office the reason we saved budget for the last question is because, in actuality, the city's controller doesn't have a huge hand in setting the budget for the city. You know, the controller's office is responsible for signing off on contracts, but the office doesn't necessarily have a role in preventing an agency from engaging in a contract. They can audit the contract and look for waste, but they don't set the budget of specific city agencies. So, you know, getting them to thread that needle in their answers and talk really about what they would do, it was tough. But we do know that this is a role that often is a springboard for people to go on to run for mayor. You know, of the last, you know, eight or so city controllers, I think, or nine city controllers, eight have gone on to run for mayor, only one successfully. So I think it's difficult.
And the only one that didn't was
politics.
A woman.
Of course.
And we will continue in a minute and include your calls. This is coverage of the first Democratic primary controllers debate on WNYC. This is live coverage on WNYC of the first official campaign finance board debate in the Democratic primary for New York City Comptroller. I'm Brian Lehrer with Bridget Bergen, who was one of the questioners in the debate tonight, and WNYC and Gothamist Gwen Hogan, who's been covering this race for Comptroller on an ongoing basis. Our phone number is 646-435-7280. And David in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
So I worked in the city controller's office for 12 years, and one of the fallacies is that you don't want the controller to be a stock picker. The controller doesn't manage spend day-to-day managing investments. The key job, this is a watchdog position. We want somebody with broad values and a broad vision for what to do with that job. And so the whole focus on, I picked investments, is, I think, you hire people for that. And you manage them. So that whole focus seemed to me to be sort of a mistake in how you look at the
right.
office.
Okay, that's interesting. Gwen, in your coverage of the race, do you feel like they're emphasizing that? And the controller is the chief fiduciary officer, or that might not be exactly the technical term, for managing the pension funds. So do you think the caller is exactly right?
Well, I do. I think that's super interesting, especially having worked in the comptroller's office, right? Like what is more important here? Like the job of being able to manage this large office and pick the right managers and, be able to work with the pension boards, or is it somebody who has direct experience? I mean, I think that we've seen candidates who have worked in finance talk about that because they think that it will, resonate with voters. But, you may be right that actually more than, having worked on Wall Street, which several of the candidates, tout, or sitting on a board, that, just having management experience, which we learned apparently Zach Iskell has managed the largest team during that lightning round, Bridget. With 1,200, I believe 1,200 managees, whereas you have, Brad Lander had a staff of 50, and Kevin Parker had said he'd managed 25 people. So that's definitely something that people should be thinking about in terms of, is this person ready for an office of several hundred people? Around 800 people work in that office.
That Brian Benjamin brought up the fact that he managed, I'm not sure if it was pension fund investments or endowment investments for Brown University, where he went and is on the board of trustees for, if I got that right. And Benjamin brought up holding the city accountable for how they use the extra billions that are coming in from the COVID relief bill, because they won't get that money again next year. So it has to be managed correctly so they don't get into some ongoing commitments that they're not going to be funded for in the future. Here's a little of Brian Benjamin on that.
I think the first order of business is to make sure that you're holding the city accountable, the mayor and the city council. And one place that we have to hold them accountable on is on the COVID funds that are coming in, the federal funds that are coming in, about $14 to $15 billion that are coming in that need to be managed to make sure that that it's being spent in a way that is consistent with the need for recovery. But what I would say is that, as I'm chair of the Senate Budget and Revenue Committee, I witness the fight between the mayor, the comptroller, and the governor on long-term borrowing. And, first it was $7 billion, then it was $5 billion. There was a lot of back and forth. It would have been so much better if we all had worked together on that to figure out that problem. Fortunately, the federal government, through the American Rescue Plan, stepped in and bailed us out. But I don't expect that bailout to come next year.
And that did come up in the debate again later on, Bridget. What would you say about that issue? Were there many differences on how to use this one-time infusion of a number of billions of dollars from the federal stimulus bill or relief bill?
Well, I mean, I think, to be clear, I mean, this federal infusion, while it's a one-shot, it is stretched over multiple years. And, the city is fortunate that, in this particular year where we were facing this deficit, and at one point, the talk of, potential layoffs was a very serious conversation, the city was able to avoid that. people who have looked at how the city does plan to spend, you know, places like the Citizens Budget Commission that have looked at how the city is spending some of these federal funds have been critical of using them towards programmatic expenses that could set expectations for New Yorkers that, you know, then when the money goes away, what do? You suddenly have created a new program or expanded a certain program and you no longer have the funds to pay for it. The argument to the other side of that, of course, is that these are programs that help that are intended to help the city get back on its feet. So if you expand a summer youth program, well, that is important at this time because that's part of helping the city and, you know, people within the city recover. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting and certainly a flashpoint was Councilmember Lander wants to get a bill passed that would track some of this federal stimulus spending and essentially pointed towards Speaker Johnson asking when that bill would be put forward. And so, you know, that debate, you know, he also was very critical of the fact that Speaker Johnson was not at any of the executive budget hearings during this current budget negotiation process. Now, of course, Speaker Johnson made very clear that a lot of the work that gets done is done by the budget negotiating team. That is not done in, you know, public view. However, it is more common to see the speaker at some of these oversight hearings, these budget oversight hearings, particularly when you have someone like the budget director or the police commissioner testifying. So I thought the way those issues kind of intersected was very interesting.
Gail in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gail.
Good evening. I'm sorry if this is going to sound a bit repetitious, but I'm just wondering if there is more detail about the role that the Comptroller's Office plays in the budgeting process. It seems to me that at the very least, the Comptroller's Office would provide advice and counsel to the City Council and to the Mayor's Office. Does anybody know more detail about this?
I can take that, Bridget.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah. The controller is involved in the budget process. Basically, you know, the budget gets hammered out over several months. The mayor presents its budget, or the mayor presents his or her budget, and then there is a chance for the controller to respond and comment on it, and the city council gets its say, and the controller is involved sort of several times during the process. And then also, you know, each year, you know, pulls together a financial report on the city's health. So definitely involved in, doesn't have the final say, but has a voice in the process.
Sante in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sante.
Oh, hi, Brian. You might recall me from the last question to Diane Morales when she was on recently. You told me to call again, so here I am.
Sure.
My first question is,
you think I meant it? Anyway, go ahead.
I wonder about the opportunity of having the debate tonight when there was also a mayoral a debate somewhere else. I'm not going to say where. And I prefer radio, so I listen to yours. I got an email from somebody who alerted me to that. The other thing is maybe that the debate's format should be enhanced because, as you know, I'm pretty proficient with city politics. And I do know that I do not want Kojo as an ex-controller. One thing that wasn't mentioned is that he's studying now because he doesn't even have a college degree from, this was in the press. And it's not a limitation, but for this kind of job, maybe somebody should really know a lot about finance, not just a little bit. And it is true that it's a manager's job. The first skill is to manage this 800 people who are going to work for us, supposedly.
And Sante, I'm going to leave it there. I apologize because we just have 2 minutes left in the show. Please do call us yet again and again and again. Bridget, on it being a manager's job, you asked a question for a show of hands near the end, which was whether they would reduce the size of the city payroll. They would lay off city workers. Is that what you asked?
The question was, would they try to shrink the size of the city workforce? And, you know, to be clear, I didn't ask if it would be through layoffs or through attrition. But the basic idea of the question was that, you know, the size of the city workforce, the number of city workers, you know, has an implication when it comes to pension and healthcare benefits for the long term. And so I was curious to see if any candidates would commit to doing that. This is one of those moments, Brian, where I would have to check my notes because I couldn't, I was in the moment, so I couldn't tell you everyone. I know Weprin was one of the people to raise his hands. If you've got it, Gwen, help me
and
out.
We'll go,
my thread right now.
we'll go over that tomorrow morning, perhaps, because that concludes our coverage of the Democratic controller's primary debate.
Weprin, Caruso, Cabrera, and Benjamin.
Would all shrink the payroll?
Yes,
read
correct.
Gwen Hogan's and Bridget Bergen's reporting on Gothamist and hear it on WNYC. Bridget will also join me on The Brian Lehrer Show tomorrow morning to talk more about this debate. And maybe we'll play that clip of Gwen really quickly looking up the notes of who answered how to that question. And we will talk about other New York primary news as well. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good night.